Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Oh, the shape that will get. If you've got all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I'm not playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions I have is religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
So picture this scenario. You're a Premier League manager. You're fighting for the top four. Do you want good guys or do you want bad guys in your team? That is the question that Jose Mourinho brings up time and time again in the final three episodes of All or Nothing Spurs. This is Team 33. I'm Enda Call. Colin Buig and Will O'Callaghan are on the line as always. If you want to listen back to the show after it's done, you can find us as part of the OTB Podcast Network, available now on the OTB Sports app, or you can watch it back on YouTube as well, youtube.com/offtheball. 53106 if you want to get in touch with the conversation tonight. A couple of people were in touch last week saying about their favourite chocolate bars. A lot of people agree with Will, some people disagreeing with Will, but ultimately the right answer is always going to be Galaxy chocolate. That's the number one chocolate bar in the world. So it's simple as that's the argument done. Colm, Will, very welcome along to the show again tonight.
Hi lad.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the journey, and it's I'm gonna miss the Spurs over the next few weeks.
It's been an emotional one, but mainly what I've taken from this is Jose Mourinho doesn't like good guys. That's it comes up time and time again in these three episodes. It's definitely the most recurring theme so far, Will.
Yeah, look, I enjoy a montage in anything, Enda, and we had a montage of crushing tackles and shithousery happening when Tottenham were playing, and you could see Jose Mourinho actively enjoying this new Spurs after lockdown. The only person who really didn't seem to enjoy it was Son Heung-min, who I think you can understand this, because Eric Dier goes right down the side of his shin, leaves about three stud marks in him, as Son Heung-min eventually gets into the golf cart and is brought back to the medical area, and Jose Mourinho basically makes fun of him for feeling sore and says, hey, stick that on Instagram and say I'm injured. Like, I can understand there's a definite clash here of people who enjoyed, I think, working under Pochettino and the previous regime at Spurs and those who seem to relish it. And we were right to predict that Eric Dier is right at home in this Spurs team under Jose Mourinho. And you can see that Jose Mourinho wants him as his general on the pitch, because what he seemed to enjoy the most about Eric Dier, and now maybe we understand why he went to defend him when he ran into the stand to accost those people who were bullying his brother during that FA Cup game, is that I think Jose Mourinho would go to the gates of hell for Eric Dier and vice versa.
We'll get into the sort of a reflection on the series as a whole in the second part of the show tonight. I do want to talk about how they managed to only get 9 episodes instead of 10, which is a real frustration for me coming out of this. And I was waiting for one more episode next week, but it's not happening. This is the final 3 episodes. Episode 9 is the last one. We'll start with episode 7, because up until now, it's been pretty much positive for Spurs. The initial bounce was under Jose Mourinho. Then he's trying to change the mentality of the club. That's when results start to go against them. But results really fall off a cliff in the final half of the season for Jose Mourinho, and all was not right. And episode 7 starts with the Leipzig result in Europe in the Champions League. And that's where you really start to see the frustrating side of Jose Mourinho and the angry side of Jose Mourinho, Colm.
Well, you start with episode 7 with the, I think they immediately go to half time in the Champions League round of 16 first leg against RB Leipzig, where it's 0-0 at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, but Leipzig have destroyed them. And I remember watching both of those legs, and Leipzig were so much better than Spurs. It was actually hard to believe that one of those teams were in the Champions League final the previous season. That's how dominant Leipzig were. And then they went back into the change room at half time, and you have Dele Dele Alli complaining about how poorly they're playing. And it's a warning and a foreshadowing of what's going to happen after the Wolves defeat at home, where they lose 3-2. And then Dele and Eric Dyer, best friends, have a big row. And it's been promoted for a few weeks now before these three episodes aired. And it's an enjoyable watch. And as Will, I think, was it Will tweeted yesterday, put into WhatsApp, or I think you tweeted, Will, that you're saying it just goes to show how much more enjoyable these documentaries are when things are all going wrong. And that's why people loved Sunderland Till I Die for that reason. And with episode 7, it's a brimming of Mourinho turning into the Mourinho that I was lamenting last week, saying, where's that Mourinho? This Mourinho is like a primary school teacher when they beat Burnley 5-0. And he said, if you shout a bit louder, you get tomorrow off. But now we're seeing the bastard Mourinho, you know, the one that it just wins at all costs. But the problem is his team are not willing to do that. They're not willing to follow him in that lead because football and society has moved on. And it all culminates in a brilliant training session in, I think it's episode 9, yeah, just after the West Ham game. So we'll get to that, I suppose. But number 7 is like, episode 7 is kind of a build-up to what's going to happen in the next two episodes. So I really do enjoy it. Episode 7 and 9, incidentally, are my favourite episodes out of these three.
And for anybody who hasn't seen these three episodes, if you're thinking how Mourinho deals with confrontation between his players, arguments between his players, he pretty much just sits there and lets it happen. After a 3-1 defeat to Wolves, the dressing room is despondent. Dele Alli comes in and he's slamming his boots on the ground, giving out to everyone saying that it wasn't good enough. Eric Dyer is sitting there in silence. You can see the anger building up inside him. And eventually he just explodes at Dele Alli, says that you need to stop acting like a spoiled brat and just deal with the defeat and make it go better. While this is all happening, Mourinho is sitting right beside Dele Alli and just watching it with a smile on his face. He's loving it. And you can see that I don't know whether he's playing up to the cameras, but eventually in the next couple of episodes, this happens time and time again. Mourinho's response is exactly the same. He just lets it happen, and he's actually almost happy to see this happening, Will, because now, as I mentioned before, at the start of this episode, he doesn't want good guys, and he sees the team, the players arguing with each other as a good thing because he sees that winning mentality that he likes to talk about coming into them.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up really well. We basically had the seeds of this back in the first three episodes where Mourinho came in and said, look, if anything, you guys are, you know, you're a bit too nice and I want to try and inject a little bit of steel into you. And then I think at some point he decides, I can no longer be the voice that's going to give out within this dressing room. I need you to tear each other apart and then rebuild each other. And the moment that kind of really stands out is, remember the very public argument between Hugo Lloris and Son Heung-min when they were coming off the pitch at halftime? And understandably, I thought Lloris was having a go at Son for putting his head down and not bothering to track back at all when he had made very little effort to win a 50-50. And Son Heung-min obviously felt that his captain was attacking him. We got to see for the first time the other side to that, where it went into the dressing room, because on TV, we only actually saw the point where they go to the tunnel and we see the end of the game where Spurs have won and they hug each other and it becomes a story in the papers the next day and is very quickly forgotten about. Son Heung-min cuts a very frustrated figure in the last two or three episodes of this series. And I think he's actually a bit hurt that more of his teammates don't come to defend him at the point that Hugo Lloris is coming in to have a massive go at him. And I wonder how much of his despondency goes back to Eric Dyer and that tackle that happens at training, which he feels is entirely unfair in a training session when they're in the middle of a busy period. Like, as we remember back in June, these players are playing every 3 to 4 days. And Mourinho seems to have very little time for fatigue or knocks or the idea that someone mightn't be able to play the next day. And again, this is stuff that we've seen throughout the series. It's almost like the series gets boiled down to this little kind of period in episode 8 and 9 particularly. And as you say, Mourinho is more than happy for the guys to have a go at each other. He feels that they're going to grow as a group if they're going to take leadership and have a shout. And he's certainly not going to be the intermediary if an argument is happening. He'll put his feet up, sit down, and watch two players have a go at each other.
it definitely is the theme of these three episodes, is watching arguments boil over. The second one in this is the argument, like you said, between Hugo Lloris and Heung-Min Son. And there's also one in training between Lucas Moura and I think it's Serge Aurier, yeah, during the same training session that Son gets injured. So they're basically, Mourinho wants to have 11v11 after a bad defeat in the league, and he wants to see who's the best player, who's willing to fight for the jersey. There's some seriously tough challenges going in this training session for such a busy period. Son gets injured by Eric Dier, or gets hurt by Eric Dier, because he gets a stud in the shin. He goes into the dressing room, and then a fight breaks out between Lucas Moura and Serge Aurier, because Lucas Moura's not happy with the way that Serge Aurier keeps talking in the games, or what he's saying. So there seems to be a lot of frustration here. And it's hard to tell whether that frustration is a good thing or a bad thing.
A little bit of division as well, Andy, you might have noticed in that argument with Lucas Moura too. I know the camera kind of pans over and half catches it, because their focus was on the golf buggy coming out to get Son away from the training area. But what I noticed is that the French-speaking players, who we got to meet a little bit when they were having a chat with Ndombele about the fact that he isn't settling into the club and that Sissoko has become his best mate, I noticed that when Serge Aurier was arguing with Lucas Moura, it was Sissoko who kind of came across as a peacemaker, and Ndombele was over there too. So it seems that the French-speaking guys have set up a little bit of a clique or a friendship group there, and they weren't going to allow Lucas Moura to bully their friend either. So I just thought that was kind of interesting, that Mourinho must have no problem with little small internal divisions and groups happening within that squad either.
Well, there was also, it was Serge Aurier holding Hugo Lloris back on the pitch during the argument with Heung-Min Son. Who was right in that argument, Colm? I think it's Hugo Lloris.
Yeah, it was Lloris. It was. It just because Son felt so hard done by since he returned from quarantining after he had surgery in South Korea, because there was the 11v11 training incident, which you've already referred to, and then the next match was the Everton match. So obviously Son was feeling victimised, and this is a guy who, basically, in Harry Kane's absence, has been their only threat going forward. And they badly needed him and benefited from him when he was on the pitch, i.e. when he got that bad arm injury and still scored twice against Aston Villa, including the match winner in the last minute. And then when he was unable to play, Spurs seriously struggled. So in his mind, he's like, why are you all turning against me? I'm all you have. So it all goes back to Jose Mourinho. Some people just like to watch the world burn. And Mourinho is one of those, because the 11v11 training session is so ill-advised. And the way that they edit it is that there's danger coming here. This is going to be, this is not going to end well for someone. And Mourinho is just watching it, smiling, watching these players tear each other apart. Now, again, the way they've edited it is the West Ham game is poor. Do they win that game? Yeah, they win that game courtesy of an own goal. They win a 2-0, actually. And it was an own goal and a Harry Kane goal. And then they lose to Sheffield United. And by all accounts, Mourinho laid into the players at full time after the Sheffield United defeat at Bramall Lane, but the cameras weren't in there, the Amazon cameras, so we didn't see that. And this was his reaction, was to do the 11v11 training. And then after that, the results started improving. So you have the Everton win, the Bournemouth draw, okay, but then they beat Arsenal in the North London Derby, and then they beat Newcastle, Leicester, and they draw with Palace. So everything works out after the training session. So it makes Mourinho look very good. But what I thought, that's almost coincidental that these results started getting better, because Mourinho loves it. He loves that they're tearing each other apart. And Son is sitting in the physio room. Eric Dier comes in to apologise, and Son has said, you could have broken my shin. And Mourinho's just there smiling. And he says to Son, put it on Instagram. Say you got this in training. Laughs and walks away. If I was Son, I'm like, what is wrong with you? You maniac.
Well, before that, he also says, which is interesting because it's something that he said publicly as well, that there's a difference between an injury and a knock.
Yeah,
that's what he says to the doctors when Son is on the table. One thing I noticed about the injured players, because we see a lot of them during this All or Nothing Spurs, is that the injured players are sitting looking out at the current crop of players fit on the pitch. That can't be good for you mentally.
No, it can't. But I'm guessing that, right, let's assume, right, under Maurizio Pochettino, those chairs were facing the opposite direction. And Mourinho, the first thing he did was come in and says, turn those chairs around because I hate injured players. So have them looking at what's happening. It seems to be Hugo Lloris a lot, but as the captain, he doesn't seem to mind that. And Eric Lamela's there fair because he's been so injury prone basically since he's arrived at the club. I mean, Lamela's a conundrum in general in terms of what he offers. He's like a defensive forward almost. He's been there for so long. But he seems to be watching a lot. And then another player I just feel so sorry for in this is Michel Verme for so many reasons.
18 months. He hasn't played a game in 18 months.
And then he plays, he's at fault for the Norwich goal, and then they lose in penalties to Norwich in the FA Cup in the middle of a horrendous run. And he's just so sorry about that. And he's so supportive to his teammates. And even, spoiler alert to anyone who's not following Spurs transfer business, but at the very end of the series, they are having a gathering at a barbecue, I think, and they're saying goodbye to Jan Vertonghen and Verm. But Vertonghen gets the bigger send-off. You know, he gets the signed picture by the rest of the team and the Superman image with everybody signs autographs. And unless they gave Verm something and they just edited it out. It's just, I feel so sorry for him. But that's the life of a third-choice goalkeeper. And that's why I think it is a really good documentary in places, because it gives you a genuinely thorough insight into modern football. There are limitations to this documentary, which we'll probably discuss as well, but that's what I enjoy about it. But for me, I think the Danny Rose scene is still my favourite, but I think the 11v11 training montage is just fantastic viewing.
Well, there are a lot of mundane parts to this this series in terms of the life of a footballer. We had the conversations between Dele Alli and his favourite chocolate bars. The absolutely pointless couple of minutes scene in episode 6 where they're playing the PlayStation, and the toothpaste scene in episode 1, I think, back in the day. And then the send-off for the players. If anybody wants to see what being a professional footballer is and how much of a job it actually is, Just watch that scene, because if you've ever been in the office where somebody has left, it was almost identical to that, where they call them up on the stage. It's an awkward 2 to 3 minutes where they have to say thanks to all their past colleagues and that they'll really miss them. And then they kind of just sit down with their presence and get on with their day. I mean, I can just imagine being in the shoes of some people that didn't actually like Jan Vertonghen or Michel Vorm and were just like kind of half clapping in the background. They didn't really know them, and they're like, "Oh, who are they leaving? Were they with us long?" And I don't think I've ever spoken to them. So it was a weird situation. On Mourinho, just while we're on the discussion of frustrated Mourinho, do we prefer frustrated Mourinho that we're used to at this stage, or do we prefer episode 1 to 6? Mourinho, where he's nice and all about mentality and all about getting the players going again and kind of friendly?
For my entertainment end, I far prefer the Mourinho of episode 7 until 9. I think it's actually reflective of the series in a more general sense too, that 1 to 3 were really interesting because you had this changeover in power and where are Spurs going to go, and you're getting this insight into what's happening. And then I found that like 4, 5 and 6 were a little bit flowery. I know we got the nice story of you got a youth player coming through and he's getting his chance to play and they've got this injury crisis and where are they going to go, and it's starts building its way towards Act 2, and Spurs have fallen a little bit off the pace, but Jose is still fairly happy with the exception of losing his dog. And then we get to the Leipzig result appears to be the real kind of flip of the switch, which is they go to Germany, they're not entirely out of the tie beforehand despite having not played well in the first leg, and then they get hammered and don't land a single punch in that second game in Germany. And after that, I think Mourinho decides to change his approach, and he goes back more to the Mourinho that we had heard about at Real Madrid, that kind of divided the dressing room and that fell out with Iker Casillas and couldn't get on with Sergio Ramos, and he was the guy who everyone in Inter loved to hate but still kind of loved him, that Zlatan Ibrahimovic talked about. We got a bit of an insight into that Mourinho, who became, you know, a motivator, a win at all costs kind of character, and maybe that's what Spurs need if they're going to get further up the table. And I take Colm's point that it is nicely framed, that okay, here's peak Mourinho in the middle of this, having his players kicking the S out of each other, and then result upturn and they finally get into the Europa League. But maybe Spurs' end of season form does somewhat come down to again that group to come together, because some of the players, to give a balance on it, I know Son particularly loses his smile in the last three episodes, but Toby Alderweireld seems to really enjoy working under Jose Mourinho and those kind of defensive details that he gets, and you know, having to be a little bit tougher. We see, say, Winks, who comes across a lovely guy. I mean, I love that scene where he went to the old folks' home and he spent so much time talking to them, and he's signing autographs for kids on a different session, and we get this impression this is a really nice homegrown kid who's living his dream. But also Mourinho is mentioning that he's getting into more tackles now. He's running more than he was previously. He's not passing the ball sideways as much. He's now playing an incisive pass. And it is good to see that some of those players flourish. Ben Davies seems to particularly love playing under Jose Mourinho. And then our heart just breaks and we see Troy Parrott in the background of multiple scenes and no sign of Troy Parrott getting anywhere closer to the first team.
Listen. There are several things that have been left out of this. Not most of all, Troy Parrott. Because, look, take the Norwich defeat in the FA Cup, for example. It's one of the key scenes in the entire thing. And they're focused on Hugo Lloris and Michel Vorm, because Michel Vorm is coming into this game after 18 months gone. This was Troy Parrott's game. This wasn't Michel Vorm coming back into the team. The narrative going into that game was Troy Parrott and finally getting a start because they had so many injuries up front. And then missing the penalty that eventually lost the game. Troy Parrott doesn't even get a mention. I mean, I can't help but, I know they're trying to shelter him a little bit, but I can't help but be a little bit insulted on Troy Parrott's behalf. I mean, he was left out of the team by Jose Mourinho for so long, and now he's just completely whitewashed out of this this entire series. But that's definitely one disappointment for me.
I don't know. Like, we're so biased there towards that. Like, they obviously looked at it and said, there's not enough here. There's not enough of a storyline here. I mean, you could argue that the person who should have been centre stage after the Norwich defeat was Jedson Fernandez, signed in January.
That was a terrible penalty.
And he missed the penalty. Awful, but we don't see the penalty. Man. We just see the cinematic version of Jedson hitting it and then the Norwich staff in the background celebrating and everyone else staying perfectly still. So I actually don't remember what the penalty looks like. But
it was awful.
Jedson. I'll take your word for it. Because
I know they slowed it down. Yeah, but he just like passes it to the Norwich.
But he should, like, if anything, if you're coming to it completely objectively, and you have no affiliation with Ireland or Portugal, you're going to be like, well, I think Jetson's the story there. And they don't go with either. So you could say you have the same problem there. I just want to say one thing about Mourinho there. I agree with Will. Episode 7 to 9 is definitely my favourite Mourinho. I love that side of him. And I understand why he, from a personal perspective, went for the 11v11 training session, because he was sick of these players' attitudes. Like, these guys are soft. They're so soft. But I would say my criticism of it is that he's not reading his players correctly. They're not like the players he had at Porto and Chelsea the first time around. You just have to be more subtle. I mean, Alex Ferguson's biggest strength was adapting to people all the time. He wasn't the same Fergie in the early 90s as he was in the late 90s. You adapt all the time. Mourinho's staying exactly the same because his ego doesn't allow him to change. I mean, he says in episode 8, on the team bus on the way to the second leg against Leipzig, I bring expectation. It's my fault. And even at the end, one of the last quotes was, you know, arriving 14th, finishing 6th. A good achievement? I think so. You know, because that's all he cares about is his own personal results. That's why he does this 11v11 training session. And the other thing about Mourinho, which I was just shaking my head at, is he's obsessed with the strengths of the opposition. He accentuates their positives. So they're 2-1 up at home to Wolves in that match where Delhi and Dyer fight afterwards. Half-time 2-1. And all he talks about is Wolves. They're very fast. They're intense. They're powerful. Watch them. Watch them. Be careful of them. Of course, you're going to get into the minds of the players. Half-time against Manchester United in the first game back after restart. They're 1-0 up. He talks about a player from the opposition who's not even on the pitch. He goes into great detail about Pogba. Pogba, watch Pogba. Careful, he's very good. He's very, very good. As if to say, like, he's way better than he. And the last thing he says, so he sends them off, and they're like, yeah, let's go. And then one last thing, don't let Pogba shoot. He's not even on the pitch. You have to worry about the 11 players on the pitch. And what happens? Pogba comes on, wins a penalty, game finishes 1-1. Like, I don't know. Look, it's edited in a certain way. I'm sure he goes into much more tactical detail than we saw. I'm sure he does accentuate the positives of his own team. But what the viewer sees is Mourinho's obsession with the opposition.
Is it upsetting? I don't know. I definitely do think there's two sides to the story in terms of getting into your players' heads and almost foreshadowing your own defeat before it happens. But also, as a manager, your job is to talk about where the dangers are, how to stop those dangers. There's also the argument that, you know, Pep Guardiola and Klopp would be talking about how we can do damage to their team as opposed to how they can do damage to us. But I suppose there's two ways of looking at it. I agree with both of you. I think this is the better Mourinho. I think, personally, I would rally behind him a lot quicker than the one who I think would be kind of a little bit fake in the first three episodes. He's still getting to know the players, trying to have fake banter. I think this is a Mourinho that would get the best out of me. But again, as you say, Colin, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get the best out of Dele Alli or the best out of Son. And it certainly doesn't seem like he is. But I do want to address a couple of things in the that we are missing. But we have to talk about the COVID crisis and what happens in episode 8. So we see sort of a little bit of the early days where the players are now doing fist pumps as opposed to handshakes at the start of the day. But who put the executive in charge who didn't know why Daniel Levy was so against not having fans in the stadium? Can I just ask that question?
It was absolutely bizarre. It was that kind of slightly above middle management into senior management within a role, within a club, who was kind of like, I'm going to be deadly honest here. I've no idea about football. So, Daniel, tell me exactly why you've got an issue with us not having games at home.
But and not even that. It's like, from a purely business standpoint, if you're coming from that, why are you so against not having the gate receipts of 60,000 people when you've just built a $1 billion stadium?
Yeah, and like the thing is, what I thought was quite clever was that around the pandemic too, they showed their new, I think they call it the Dare, which is the walk that you do across the top of their stadium. And you know, Daniel Levy is emphasizing how much they can make from the match day experience. And you know, initially, shop revenue isn't down, and that's great news. And you know, earlier this year, they'd struck their big deal with the NFL, and this was going to be the cash cow that would be able to pay the wages that they need to keep players like Alderweireld and Eriksen at the club. And this is the way Spurs are going to go forward. And then the pandemic hits, and yeah, as you mentioned, this lady who seems to be doing some of the negotiations and the back and forth with the Premier League too seems shocked that Daniel Levy would have a problem with leaving a few million quid a game behind for the five home fixtures that they have left. So we get to see kind of the shuddering effects of the pandemic coming in, almost an acceptance that it's going to be very difficult for Spurs to do business. I wonder too the timing of the conversation that they have with Ndombele about trying to turn his form around. It's almost acceptance that nobody around Europe in this pandemic is going to have the money for us to be able to do a quick flip on you and sell you back even at a small loss. So we're now going to have to invest some time to try and get you happy at the club and to try and make things work out. What I did enjoy, lads, I don't know if you noticed this too, is that the conversations that the Spurs players were having in that area where they have their breakfast and Sky Sports News is on the screens on the wraparound, they were speculating just like we were about whether the Premier League would come back. You get the news that Serie A have suspended for a month. Harry Kane is thinking the Liverpool fans are probably going to be really mad if the Premier League season doesn't get completed. The doctors are speculating about how long it could take to come back and how quickly he could get the season finished. Even Mourinho is accepting it could be September or October before they get back to play again. They mention null and void when they're having their conversations. These are the exact conversations that took place, I think, in our office in the initial 2 or 3 days after the pandemic really ramped up.
Yeah, and the coronavirus doesn't actually appear too much in this. I suppose, what can you do if the players, you can't really film players from home because everyone is in lockdown, but their situation was very much similar to what everyone else was feeling at that stage. They didn't know about the future. They didn't know what was going to happen. Mourinho didn't really know how he was going to get his players trained. And there was all this sort of management rushing to try and figure out what the hell we do after the Friday the 13th, which I actually forgot that it was the 13th and it was a Friday in March when we had that avalanche. It was like the stock market falling off sports events. You had the Euros being postponed, the Olympics being postponed, the Premier League gone, the Championship gone, Serie A gone. Everything was just falling apart at that stage. And working in a sports station, it was quite scary. And you kind of get that feeling in Tottenham as well. They just don't know what's going to happen. What I didn't like, and what they have, they have whitewashed quite a lot of this because it is, at the end of the day, a PR job for Tottenham. And I've no issue with that when it comes to arguments, when it comes to little different tactical things that Mourinho might not want it in there. What I can't get behind is them showing all the good stuff, like opening up Tottenham Stadium to the NHS, giving the food that they had in the stadium to charity, which you have to commend them for. But they didn't mention anything about Tottenham being one of the first clubs in the world to furlough their staff when they have the money to support them. I can't get behind that.
There were a lot of editorial liberties taken. And I know why they did that, because the objective of the documentary was to break into the American market. And they probably looked at this, Daniel Levy almost certainly did, was that there are going to be a lot of people watching this who know nothing about Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. So we're basically have a blank canvas here and we can tell them whatever we want because they're not going to look into it. And if you were to watch that these 9 episodes and have no prior knowledge of Spurs or not know what actually happened last season beyond what they're showing me in this documentary, you would think beyond the change of management and injuries, it's a pretty standard season. But they left out so many things that they could have included. I mean, you start with the Colchester League Cup exit on penalties way back at the start of last season. When they had Hugo Lloris in goal and Christian Eriksen missed the penalty, it wasn't the kids playing, it was a mixture. Then you have Son's incident with Andre Gomes at Goodison Park when Andre Gomes had that horrific injury. And we don't see the reaction of Son. That Son's had an incredibly emotional season, it turns out. And they left out the biggest emotion. I mean, we see Son complaining about his sending off against Chelsea and saying it was never red. And then the fight with Lloris and then the training ground incident with Dyer. But the most stressful incident for Son would have been the Gomes tackle. And that's not included. As I say, the Sheffield United changing room, we don't see that because Amazon couldn't get into the changing room. We don't see the Manchester United game at Old Trafford, which they lost because United wouldn't allow Amazon going into the changing rooms. So not their fault, but it wasn't the full picture. The furloughing of non-playing staff, the reversal of that decision, how stressed Levy became about that, how shocked he was by the reaction to originally furloughing the non-playing staff, we don't see that. They received a £175 million Bank of England loan. That's never mentioned. They break COVID protocol. Serge Aurier getting a number of haircuts. Mourinho and Ndombele out in the public park. And then the Brighton match, which apparently was a big catalyst in Pochettino leaving, where Hugo Lloris broke his arm back in October, I think it was. So there are so many elements that are omitted. And they're actually the most fascinating parts of the season. So it is totally whitewashed into thinking that this is a purely footballing focused season, which apparently is what they intended to do. But you have to change your plans when for 3 months of the season, there is no football played. So I don't really buy the fact that COVID happens and the players have this meeting and they're saying, well, initially we're going to suspend the season for 3 weeks and then it becomes longer than that. And I think the last time we see them is in April and then it skips back to May and it's the season's about to start again. And I want to see more. I want to see what happens in between. What do the players do? Because we already know that they're so much more normal than one might have imagined beforehand. And the mundanity of their lives is actually extraordinary. So, you know, there are weaknesses to this documentary. And that is for me, is what they are. They leave out so many important things that we want to see. But if you're coming to this fresh, you would find it very, very entertaining.
Do you know what it reminds me of, Colm, too, is you know that Simpsons meme where Homer and his friends go out, get drunk, can't remember exactly how they thrashed the school, and you've got Scene missing in the middle of it. That's kind of what happens with the pandemic. It's like,
yeah,
you get to a point where the doctors and physios are saying, all right, let's get watt bikes and let's put them into vans and get them around to the players who don't have a gym at home. And then it's kind of like Mourinho going, right, well, they're going to be gone for this long. And next thing it's like Scene missing and then they're back playing games again. There's not even a particular explanation of, yeah. Like I would love to have got a, you know, there is a bit of a conversation where Harry Kane is wondering, you know, what's going to happen next, and he's asking a few questions, but I'm sure there was plenty of questions from the players in that period in early May into the middle of May. What are the safety protocols going to be like when we go back to play? Because the situation evolves a lot more than what we're actually shown in the documentary. And as you mentioned, Colm, the idea of, you know, the backlash against the furloughing, the having to take out that loan to try and just be a stopgap measure. I would like to have have seen Daniel Levy interviewed and to talk about what's the implications of this further down the line for Tottenham Hotspur if, say, the money tap was to be turned off for a while? What kind of effect is that going to have for Spurs as a club, not just about transfers and in terms of who they can put onto the pitch? All that is sadly missing because the documentary makers decided that the narrative was a good last four games of the season, which sees them qualify for the Europa League.
Yeah, for all of its good, there are a lot of bad in this documentary as well. So, I mean, it is to be expected with this type of documentary, and it's probably the fly in the wall, all access everywhere, no editorial judgment on the club's behalf days are probably gone. So yeah. this is the best that we can hope for at this stage in football and the way that football is run. I do want to do the best and worst after the break, but we do have to take a quick break. If you want to get involved in the conversation today, text us on 53106 or tweet us at Team33. That's all spelled out in words. Short break, and we'll be back with the best and worst of All or Nothing Spurs.
Team 33. This is OTB Sports Radio.
All right, you're very welcome back to Team 33. And a call here with you in the company of Colm Buig and Will O'Callaghan, because we are talking about the final three episodes of All or Nothing Spurs. We are all in agreement, essentially, that there's a lot of good and a lot of bad to this documentary. So I do want to get the best and worst from the nine episodes in total. Firstly, I'll start with you, Colm. You've already mentioned it before. Best scene in this entire thing?
Yeah, I'll reiterate it. It's Danny Rose, the standoff. More fascinated by Jose Mourinho and that scene and how calm he remains. And from what I've heard, he is generally like that in one-on-one meetings anyway. He actually doesn't like one-on-one confrontation. He much prefers to do it in a wider group, which I would say is slightly unusual for a person. And I really just enjoyed that dynamic, and just seeing Rose obviously coming to this conclusion that he doesn't care anymore and he's just going to go for it. And he probably had no intention of ever playing for Spurs again himself, or knowing that he wouldn't after saying what he's going to say. But it was kind of, I'm going to give the big man, the corporation, a piece of my mind because they need to know this. And in reality, of course, what happens in that situation is the little guy, in terms of Danny Rose, gets shunted. And in his case now, as we speak, he is back at the club and, by all accounts, training with the under-23s and doesn't have a squad number for the season ahead. And I just really enjoyed that aspect to it. And that's what I would have liked to have seen more of, but it was hidden from us a bit. But I think the last three episodes, there was a bit of redemption in terms of the actual honest nature and how candid it was at times. So that's my biggest my biggest plus point is that scene, yeah, definitely, the Rose one.
Will?
My favourite scene is something slightly more silly and incidental, and it's when Jose Mourinho is talking about his defence in the penultimate episode. And the problem is that somebody on Twitter this week managed to sync it up with Blue by Eiffel 45, and it fits almost perfectly, where Mourinho's explanation of the players speaking to each other in defence is where he's like, "Babadee, babada, babadoo, babada,"
and it's sort of. He's sort of moving, and somebody, while we're on the internet, meme of that, somebody put it up as Pingu's dad when he won't eat his dinner.
It's one of those moments. I don't know how the Spurs players, and I know it was a tense moment where, like, you're in the tail end of the season, you're making sure that you get the 3 points in this game, but how somebody didn't break their whole laughing during the middle of that conversation and that halftime. It's just these kind of details that they pick up. Like, obviously, the cameras will have rolled for hours, and I'm sure there's loads of nonsense and one-off stuff that was totally useless, but that was absolute gold.
Do you know what I saw? When I saw that before I watched the episode, I thought, all right, this is out of context, it will make more sense when I watch the episode, but it made no more sense because he was given tactical instructions, then just went off at this mad fish for 5 seconds. I really wish the cameras panned to the players in more kind of the office style, just to see if they did a double check to the cameras. Oh, it was too good.
Yeah, the internet turned that into a better scene than it was. I will have to say that, though. But also, directorially, this entire documentary would have been much better if it was filmed in the style of The Office. just to give it that little bit of feel. I think my favorite scene has to be Dele Alli talking about how he brushes his teeth.
Really?
I'd say no. That's a complete lie. That was a nonsense scene. It shouldn't have been included at all. The best scene for me is either, yes, the Danny Rose argument, which is great. I really enjoyed the Hugo Lloris son stuff in the final few episodes of this, because it gives you an insight into what happened after, when we wouldn't have got access to that. Nobody knew that story, and what went on in the dressing room afterwards. And you can see the real frustration in this and a clash, and it's not directed in such a way that, you know, the Danny Rose one, you're not really sure how that went down, if it came across that way in real life, whereas this was full on emotion that the cameras just managed to catch, which I really enjoyed. Worst scene or worst part of this, Colm?
The dealing of COVID, I actually, the last two episodes were 15 minutes longer each than the previous seven. And I got to about 47 or 48 minutes of episode 8, and I was just willing it to end. I was like, oh, we'll just move on to the next episode. And I just thought they didn't fully go for it. It was a bit half-hearted, the approach to it, I thought. And they could have cut the last quarter of that episode. I didn't think they needed it.
Yeah, well, worst for me, lads, actually, from that, I think it's the period of the last episode where I'm thinking there could have been a lot more detail in a lot of kind of spicy things that happen along the way. Like even that Manchester United game, which was so crucial to their season. If they win that, they were still just about in touching distance of top four, but they end up drawing and it almost feels like a defeat, and there's the late penalty. A lot of drama in that game, and it kind of flew by pretty quickly. I've noticed that a few times, that there's actually a few what seem like important fixtures that just fly by, and then other instances get a lot more time. Yeah. What killed me is that, I mean, there's time constraints on this, and as Colin mentioned, the last two episodes are a little bit longer than the others anyway. The thing that really killed me, the worst scene for me, because I remember hating it and cringing when it went up on social media at the time too, was the Harry Kane child gender reveal,
which had
multiple camera angles. They went through it, they showed the zoom angles of his parents and of the families looking at it, him lining up the shot. There was almost more time spent on Harry Kane lining up the shot at that ball to open the pinata to show it was blue and confirm that his third child was going to be a boy, than they spent in many of the other parts of the series. And like, again, this is where it's shot wonderfully glossy, everything's in HDR, you've got Tom Hardy on the voiceover, and you know that all this money and effort has gone into it, and I can't believe that an editor would decide to focus that much time on such a nonsense of a scene.
Yeah, it was very Americanized. That scene, I didn't really enjoy that either. I probably would be on Colm's side in terms of, and yours as well, Will, that there's just that little third bit of detail in the arguments and in the tension and in the season as a whole. And I don't really like how they shaped the narrative as the season was going along, that everything's great regardless of what's happening. So when they first start off, they're going to go for the Champions League, top four, and a trophy is the aim. And then by the end of the season, it seems like they just ignored the fact that they said all that, and that finishing as in a European spot is fine.
Just on that end, Colm and I were talking about this a little bit earlier this morning, and I'm convinced the Daniel Levy piece that's in there towards the end, where he says, you know what, Europa League, after everything that's happened this season, it just wraps it up into such a nice little bow, where he goes, you know, after the circumstances, not that bad, is it? And maybe we can qualify for the Champions League through the Europa League next season. Yeah. It's entirely different to everything he said when they were sacking Mauricio Pochettino at the start, where it was all about the Champions League, and we're at the final last year, and we just stick at that level, and it's important that we're successful for the TV deals and for everything else. And then you get this nice little thing that wraps the narrative up nicely. And if you were to walk away and say, if you didn't watch the season, and maybe you weren't like us who have to follow the football forensically for work, if you're that person in America who's watching this, you're probably thinking, you know what, Jose Mourinho actually did come in and rescue a club that were in a bad place, and they ended up exactly where they needed to be.
I never fancied her anyway. It was one of those ones.
It had had the feeling of aim for the moon and you might end up in the stars kind of situation with Jose Mourinho. The bit that I didn't enjoy, I'll just add this one more. It's an elephant in the room for me, and it's an elephant in the room for me in terms of Tottenham and football coverage in general. Harry Winks is not a good player. I'm not having this. He's not a good player. He's an average player at best, and they try and shape it in such a way that he's a homegrown hero that, yes, fair enough, he seems like a nice guy. I have nothing against Harry Winks personally, but my God, the English media overblow his talent completely, and I'm just not having it. That's my two cents.
Well, doesn't it suit the narrative perfectly, Enda? It's the homegrown hero, and we saw this with Tanganga as well. And, you know, he gets his contract at the end, and there's a nice moment of his dad coming along, and the photo had been taken after signing the contract. Similarly with Winks, it's like, we've got pictures of him as a four-year-old wearing his first Tottenham jersey, which makes me feel horribly old when you realise that you remember that jersey. And then it's like, Winks is no longer this kind of crab on the pitch who sideways passes. Mourinho has got him moving the ball quickly forward. And you see that a little bit with Lo Celso too. Like, there's definitely this feeling that, we've made Lo Celso into a player. When Kiko Lamela came back, you know, it was like, Lamela's now starting to hit form. There's this idea that these were players that Pochettino would have never got to this level, but Mourinho has this magic dust that he can spray, and it will turn these players into brilliance. And it means these youth players who never get a chance, like Troy Parrott, will definitely develop within the Spurs first team.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I finish up, favourite player after coming out of this, Colin?
Oh, that's a good question. That is a good question. I will say Ben Davies. Seems like a nice lad. Seems like a nice lad. I like him.
The two lads who leave for Thongen and Eriksen. Eriksen comes across as a thoroughly nice guy, and a guy who there's no bad blood about the departure on either side. But Jan Vertonghen comes across really well. I think he's quite genuine in the charity work he does around Christmas, which we see in the kind of third and fourth episode. And again, there's an acceptance, I think, on Vertonghen's part. Once he sees that his buddy has got the lucrative contract beside him, he's probably thinking, we're both into our 30s. I'm particularly heading into my mid-30s. I'm not getting the same contract as he is. And he's accepting throughout the series that he's going to leave. You can see the players all quite like him towards the end. And the other third wild card I'd put in is the heart and soul of that dressing room, and that is Moussa Sissoko, the guy who Spurs fans used to hate a couple of seasons ago when he arrived from Newcastle. And he put in some underwhelming performances, and the feeling was he was just a runner and there wasn't more to his game. Moussa Sissoko seems to be a really important person in that dressing room, not just to that French group of players that we mentioned, but everyone just seems to love Sissoko.
Yeah, that was my wild card as well. Moussa Sissoko seems like an absolute gent, and so does Heung-min Son.
Yeah,
even though he's a little bit frustrated at the end of the series, I thought it was really interesting, the insight into Harry Kane and the respect that he garners within the Tottenham dressing room. He's by far and away their best player. Everyone knows that. Everyone respects that. Really liked Hugo Lloris. Thought that he demanded a certain performance from his teammates, even if he isn't necessarily performing the best himself. I thought you get a good insight into why he is the captain. And like you, Moussa Sissoko just comes across great in this episode.
They're all nice. That's series. Mourinho's point. They're all lovely.
They're
that's
too the nice. Thing.
No, but that's not true. You can't be too nice.
This all up in a nice little bow, just like Tottenham did with this all or nothing, the Tottenham players are all too nice.
Oh. Yeah, because here's the thing, Enda. With the exception of a few kind of flashpoints they've deliberately picked out, we don't get to see maybe the negative points about these people. Like, I wonder what the audience would think about Serge Aurier when they hear about him going out to get two haircuts during lockdown and breaking the protocols and potentially putting Tottenham in danger about their games coming back. Because that was a genuine issue at the time.
Yeah, there's a lovely little foreshadowing. And if you didn't know about the story, you wouldn't have picked up on it. When they're talking about the lockdown, Serge Aurier is the last man they show on the screen.
Right. Oh, very good.
Little Easter egg for those of us who know what happened.
Very good.
If you go back on it,
should be a continuity editor.
If you go back on it, you'll see that they're talking about lockdown. The Premier League has been cancelled, and on the training pitch, Serge Aurier is the man that they have the camera on before they cut away to the next scene. Beautiful little bit of directing. Overall, what are we going to give this out of 10? I'll start with you, Will.
I think probably a 7 or 8 out of 10. Again, I think this drags in the middle. The three episodes are a little bit more tedious after. Like, the first week was great. I really enjoyed the first week. Second week I found a little bit harder, but there were entertaining parts, which is worth persevering for. And the last three are a really good watch. I actually think you could probably watch the last three episodes of this series having not seen the previous six, and it'd still be interesting in and of themselves. So I was kind of going more towards a 6 or a 7 before this week. I think this week brings it up to a fairly solid 8. I can highly recommend that people sit down and have a watch of this. I think of its type, if you take compare it directly to Juventus and Man City particularly, this is better than those two.
Colm?
I read something based on whether I would rewatch it. I wouldn't rewatch this. But it's really, really well made, I think. It flows very well. It's very watchable. No harm in watching it, I would say, is my recommendation for people. If you already know a lot about Spurs, you're not going to get much more insight. If you don't, it's for you. It's a very good documentary. I would say 7.5 out of 10.
It's a very Cork answer from you, Colm.
How so?
You know yourself. You know that was a Cork answer.
I don't know how that was.
Just like Asher.
Very fair.
You know, Asher, no, yeah, it was grand, yeah. But if you want to watch it, yeah, do go ahead. You'll enjoy it anyway. You know, it's sort of just a you do you and we do we. You know?
Hold on. What are you giving it now, Ender?
Yeah.
Hold
on. I'm actually going to give it a 7.5 out of 10 as well. I thought it was.
Whoa. You have to justify that now. Come on.
I think what it misses doesn't outweigh what it has. Like you, I'm not sure if I would rewatch it, but ultimately I think you get enough insight into justify making it, and it's definitely better than the Man City one, which was at best a 5 out of 10. So I think there's a solid 7.5 out of 10. Wouldn't rewatch it again, but I thought it was worth watching and definitely worth analyzing in a deeper sense. And on that, that's all we have time for on Team 33, and that's all we have time for All or Nothing Spurs. Will, Colm, for what it's worth, I think you are really nice guys too.
We can be much worse guys for the next series, don't worry.
Well, that's good. We'll take a quick break.
Team 33. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Now, welcome back to Team 33. So that is us done for this evening and for All or Nothing Spurs. Text us on 53106 or tweet us at Team 33. That's all spelled out in words. Did you enjoy it overall? What are your thoughts on the documentaries? And are there any documentaries out there that you want us to cover over the next couple of weeks? Football is back as well. We will be reacting to the Premier League over the next couple of weeks. Serie A is coming back as well. How will Andrea Pirlo get on with Juventus? We will be reacting to all of that and much more next week on Team 33. But until then, take away Johan.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.